This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories. This is the first episode to be recorded during the COVID-19 crisis that the world is experiencing at the moment. It was also a bit of a test interview to see if doing remote interstate interviews was viable, and I think it was a success. I'm about to share Tanner's story with you, but there is something a little different in this episode. Tanner is a writer, and he has recorded a few of his short stories based on his life experiences, which have been woven into the interview. I also wanted to provide you with a warning before we start. Tanner discusses his experiences of sexual abuse, and if this is something that is a trigger for you, please proceed with caution. If you are struggling with your own mental health and you need support or assistance, please reach out to Lifeline on 13114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode.
My name is Tanner Muller. I'm 24 years old and I identify as a queer or gay male. Oh, I was born in Adelaide and grew up there as well. I lived in Salisbury Downs for most of my life before moving closer to Modbury. And yeah, I've never really lived out of the state before. I've just always kind of been here and yeah. So I have a younger brother. My parents used to be together, but they actually recently divorced. They were good for the most part. I feel it was definitely a process for them. When I decided to come out to them, they were familiar of what being gay was about and stuff like that, but I just don't think they were sort of prepared to have a gay son, and it was a bit of a journey and a process for them to kind of adjust and to raise me as the way I identify, I guess. So it was a bit as I said, it was a bit of a journey. It was a bit difficult in that regard, but they got there in the end, which is, I guess, is the main thing. I was 16 years old when I came out. My mum will tell you a different story of how I came out, but the way I remember it, at least, is that it was really late at night and my dad was at work at the time, and I just used the bathroom that was sort of located in my mum's room. She just happened to be up that night, and I kind of went into it kind of preparing to come out to her as soon as I finished what I needed to do in the bathroom. So when I came out, I gave her a hug goodnight and I whispered it in her ear. And the first thing she said to me was, "Are you sure?" Which kind of took me aback a bit, because I was like, I've sort of been preparing all this time to come out, and yeah. So, and I was like, yeah, I'm sure. And she then proceeded to tell me, or ask me, if she could tell my dad, which I said yes, but I didn't really want to be the one to tell him, you know.
How did he find out? Did she tell him?
She did, but I feel like at the same time it was kind of swept under the rug almost, and not really perhaps acknowledged as much as it should have been. And I feel like that's kind of a tendency that my family has with news and of that, you know, news like that, because you know, there's just been some other stuff that's kind of happened in my life and my family's life, and they're aware about it, but they don't necessarily want to take the time to kind of flesh it out and talk about it as much as they probably should be. I probably haven't actually sat down and had like a proper conversation with him, if I'm being completely honest. it would come up like occasionally, because it would kind of have to, especially when I would sort of be like, oh, I've met this guy, or taking someone home with me, that sort of thing, but never kind of sitting down and really talking about it, if that makes sense. I'm going to be a bit personal here. I was actually sexually molested when I was quite young. And just sort of, it was a bit difficult in that regard, in discovering my sexuality, because I was kind of grappling between these two ideas of like, is this wrong? Is this right? And when my family found out and stuff like that, I always kind of felt as though there was sort of a problem with me and how I was feeling. And after that event, I mean, I went to psychologists and stuff like that, but they never really mentioned like the sexuality aspect of it. It was like, this has happened to you. This shouldn't happen to you. And of course I felt that like that as well. So it was just kind of a bit convoluted in that regard, because it was, yeah, again, I was just sort of grappling between the two ideas of sexuality and sexual molestation, which is not a very good combination to have, but
no, that must have been tremendously hard.
Yeah, it was. It was actually my cousin who sexually molested me, so just the whole family dynamic after that was just a bit more complicated. It almost became a catalyst for why my mum doesn't talk to her siblings anymore, because they would sort of pick sides. And yeah, so he was at the time he was almost 20 years old, and I think I was about maybe 5 or 6 at the time. And my my mum's other siblings were like taking their children to see him and still interact with him and stuff like that. Despite the fact that they knew what he did, they sort of were more focused on trying to maintain this kind of family dynamic, and they sort of were considering more of that as a higher regard opposed to what happened to me and what potentially happened to their children as well. So, yeah, it was a bit screwed up, to be honest. You led me into the room, your hands pressed into my waist. Instantly, I felt a sense of discomfort. There was no escaping these four walls I had become so familiar with. In that moment, my bedroom felt distorted somehow, as though you had painted the walls or shifted the furniture. I sat on the bed, although it didn't feel like my own. You winked at me, like you were proud of what you were about to achieve, to finally replace your imagination with reality, to fulfill your vile fantasy. You took command of the atmosphere and manipulated my undeveloped sense of being. You stood in front of the bed, your body towering over me like a skyscraper. You removed each article of your clothing slowly, bit by bit. I quivered in fear as you took my hand and placed it onto your neck. It felt cold and rough to the touch. From that point onwards, you strung me around like a puppet, using my strings to move me however you pleased. Your wish was my command. There was a clear look of uncertainty riddled upon my face, yet you proceeded regardless. You probably got a kick out of taking advantage of my youth. The more discomfort I revealed to you, the better it seemed in your mind. Over the coming years, these acts formed part of a routine I grew to expect. From that point onwards, I recognized it as something ordinary and natural. I became your instrument. With more practice, the more your skills developed. I was your hobby, your toy, your thing, and there was no way out. I could see no exits, only stop signs. And you owed me entirely. As for now, my thoughts are ingrained with doubt. Although recovered from the ordeal, it has plagued my existence. form part of my past, present and future, like a scar that will never vanish no matter the lengths I go to cover it. I don't let the incidences of my childhood reflect who I am or who I want to be. I see developments within myself to rid these thoughts from my memory. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but I will always and forever be infected by the thought of you and the impact you will always have. When I was, again, when I was seeing these psychologists and stuff like that to kind of cope with the trauma of being sexually assaulted at a young age, it was, I never kind of married the two together. I always felt as though there was something wrong with me for liking men and appreciating men and stuff like that. So it was definitely a journey to kind of not only accept the situation and accept what happened to me, but also accept myself as a gay man. And yeah, it was definitely a journey, but yeah, we got there in the end, which I think is the main thing. The first time I ever saw two men interacting and being sexual like that on television was, it's kind of a bit embarrassing, but the show Skins had a moment where someone who was, who considered themselves to be heterosexual and had a girlfriend was secretly hooking up with a gay man. And that was kind of the first time that the idea was kind of exposed to me. And even growing up, I went to an all-boys Catholic school, so there was a lot of confusion around that as well, because, again, I always felt as though there was something wrong with me, because I was being told that if I wanted to live this life and associate myself with a religion or something like that, then I wouldn't be welcomed into their spaces, or I wouldn't be accepted for who I am. And I guess that was kind of reflected on my peers as well. They didn't really know how to handle me in that regard, because I guess I was considered different to them. They were sort of more concerned with relationships and getting girlfriends, and I was still trying to sort of figure myself out. And I initially came out as, well, I think many people can relate to this, I initially came out as bisexual, thinking that I wanted to not fully commit to the whole I'm gay type thing, but just still have that kind of safety net of, oh, but I also still like girls, you know? I mean, I even remember having a conversation with one of my teachers at the time, and he wanted to sort of sit down with me and discuss my sexuality, because I guess it had kind of gone around the school that I was interested in guys, but also girls at the same time. And he kind of sat me down and he was like, you know, I think bisexuality is sort of like a way for gay people to initially kind of discover themselves, which I don't like agree with whatsoever, but it was just interesting that that was what I was told at that age. It was sort of like, you can either choose between two. There's no possible way that you can like both. I mean, in my situation, he was right, but I feel like it doesn't speak to everyone and everyone else who is kind of experiencing that, because, you know, you don't have to choose between one or the other. You can like both. And I feel like that's an important thing to be telling children as well, especially that at such a young age, you know. My friends, if you could call them that, were definitely interested in knowing about my sexuality, just because it was such an unfamiliar thing to them. I remember some days people would be like, but like, what do you really like more? Do you like guys more or girls more? And I would kind of play around with them a bit. I'd be like, you know, I'm kind of feeling like 60-40 today. Maybe tomorrow I might feel like 70-30. Like, I don't know. I kind of liked the attention it kind of gave me, I guess. But yeah. But I feel like I didn't really have like a solid friendship group in high school, at least in till probably about like year 11 or year 12 or something like that, when we started sort of having classes at the girls' school, because everyone was just kind of, they kind of didn't, how do I put this? I guess because it was such an unfamiliar concept to them, they didn't really know how to approach me, or they didn't know how to engage with me. And yeah.
Did you go through high school feeling kind of isolated and lonely, or did you have a support network around you?
I like to say that I would sort of bounce between groups of friendship groups. I would kind of bounce between people, and like one moment I would be playing handball at recess, and then I'd be in the library at lunch and with a whole different group of people. So there wasn't like a solid support network, I would say, just because I would constantly just be bouncing around these friendship groups. And yeah, again, there was just never anything that was really like solid, and I didn't ever really feel as though I could turn to someone if I had a question about my sexuality or anything like that. It was just very heteronormative and very influenced by Catholic culture, and I feel like in many ways now I'm kind of trying to undo that as much as possible in my life, because I no longer kind of want to associate myself with that influence, and yeah. If I'm being completely honest with you, I only started really, truly start interacting with gay people after downloading Grindr. And I remember that my friend and I, at the time, we would always ditch school and would go to this park around the corner. And we developed this fully realized Grindr profile, in that we had a profile picture, we had nudes, we could like send our location if we needed to, and we would kind of watch from afar as these people would just like meet us in a public place and instantly kind of feel deflated because they knew it was just like a setup almost, and would never really like reach out to them and be like, here I am, haha, I tricked you, but like would kind of just watch from afar and be like, he actually came, oh my god. So probably not the best way to kind of introduce myself to the queer community, but yeah. he wasn't gay at all, but he was probably the first person that kind of was as accepting as most people were, and they were definitely curious as to who I was and how I identified now, and yeah, I think it was just purely based off of curiosity, and we were looking for something to do at the time. But I have sort of gay friends here and there, but they're sort of incorporated into friendship groups, if that makes sense. I feel like I don't have like a solid gay group of friends. They're always kind of scattered about, and yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, like I used to watch like Sex in the City when I was younger, and I would kind of like secretly hope and pray that one day I would sort of have that kind of tight knit group of people where we would all be we would kind of have all the same kind of or identify all the same way, and that we would always can like sort of turn to one another if we needed to with the issues that we're experiencing. But yeah, I just kind of, we're not so sort of reliant on having those tight group of gay friends, because it is so accepting now, and we can sort of turn to multiple people. We don't always have to turn to people who identify as us, because people are just so much more understanding at this point, and which is such a positive environment to be in at the moment. So after high school, I went to university and I studied creative writing, and I did that for 3 years before deciding that I wanted to pursue an honours degree. And the study that, or the research that I focused on in that honours degree was approaching creative writing in a way that was able to raise subjugated voices of queer males, and writing all these different short stories to kind of create this fully realized concept of allyship, or sort of trying to promote the idea of allyship through these stories. And yeah. You know, funnily enough, the stories that I created as part of my honours project have actually become a book that I've recently released out into the world. It's called Under Limelight, so Under-Limelight. It's available on Amazon Kindle and Apple iBooks for $7.99. And yeah, just to kind of bounce off of what I was talking about with my honours project before, the stories revolve around a queer dating website, and it kind of gives you an insight into the people who engage with this site, kind of gives you an insight into their lives and the issues that they're facing and how they're kind of navigating this very confusing virtual space that's meant to be for the community, but there's a lot of judgment and a lot of things that happen within the space that are really problematic and troublesome for a lot of queer male people. And yeah, I did take the self-publishing route in releasing this book, because I kind of automatically knew that if I were to take it to a traditional publishing house, that I would be turned away because, you know, it wouldn't be necessarily profitable, or because it's not the length of a traditional novel. That, you know, it is quite condensed. I will admit that it's only about 8,000 words. And, you know, in saying that, I feel like there is so much power in releasing something that it doesn't necessarily have to be the length of a book. You know, I feel like there's so much that can be said with these really condensed short stories, and you know, these are important messages that we should be communicating in really simple ways nowadays, and I'm happy to sort of be a part of that conversation. You try to build confidence before an encounter. Somehow you find it within yourself to put aside your insecurities for a moment. What drives you is knowing that someone desires you, that someone has the ability to see past it all. And because of this, you're willing to trust. As you walk along the driveway and knock on their door, you're supposed to build anticipation. You're supposed to be welcomed into their home and accepted for your flaws. After all, you showed them vulnerability and revealed some of the more delicate aspects of yourself. You're not supposed to be questioned, to be antagonized about your appearance, to be completely demoralized. However, I've learned there can be exceptions to these unspoken rules. The man places his hands upon my shoulder and lets out a sigh.
Come on, man. What did I say in the chat? I'm into large guys, but not this.
My eyes bulge from their sockets, but I still manage a nervous smile. He continues.
Pull up those pictures you sent, because I'm certain they're different to what I see here.
I remain silent, still in complete disbelief.
You should really start looking after yourself, because the way you seem to be living at the moment is just going to cause you problems in the future. I'm surprised you don't consider yourself obese. Do you even know what obese means?
He says all of this while cupping my stomach, as though I were pregnant. What follows is a decision you make for yourself. Initially, you think it best to walk away, avoid the conflict, and never speak of this person again. But upon reflection, you decide to stand up for yourself, to raise your voice, build your armor, and let him know you're not going anywhere without a fight. My response to him is this.
Get your fucking hands off me. You don't get to fix your mistake by giving a lecture about my size. I'm well aware of who I am and I have nothing to hide. Let me make it clear. You don't have to be sexually attracted to this body, but the moment you try to discourage me, invade my space, and claim that I need to make some changes in my life because of your own self-absorption, we're going to have a problem. He shrugs but is speechless. Finally, I grin at him, and I cup my stomach with both hands. This time it's on my own terms. This time it represents triumph and authority.
Homophobia is just always a thing that kind of comes in waves, I feel. I mean, I guess it predominantly happened when I was in high school, and because people were so unfamiliar with queer culture and what being gay was about, a lot of them kind of turned to hatred, and they would call me names and stuff like that. And yeah. But I feel like at the same time, though, I've been fortunate enough in that regard to not have a story that I go to when people ask me if I've ever experienced any form of homophobia. Again, it's always kind of come up sporadically sometimes, but I've never actually been beaten up or abused in that way. I think it's mainly because of my size and because I'm so tall, and people are a bit intimidated by me, which is a great thing to have. But I've definitely a lot of name calling, but nothing that's ever sort of turned to a physical type thing. But then again, I would feel like I was able to sort of handle myself and kind of stand up for myself if someone would come to me and say, "You're gay," and I'm like, "I know," and they'd be like, "You're a faggot," and I'll be like, "Whatever." So I've always had a tough exterior to kind of protect myself and to kind of not allow people's words to kind of influence me or impact me in any way, because I feel like if we spend too much time focusing on those types of things, then I can't really live my life all that much. I'm sort of too focused on recalling that time someone called me a faggot or something like that. You know, relationships have always been a bit complicated for me, and I feel like that is mostly to do with the whole concept of online dating and Grindr and stuff like that, because, you know, when you sort of start engaging with those types of things, you always feel as though that relationships just aren't a very common thing to be engaging in, because you would always kind of have all these people looking for the next hookup. And so I've always kind of been a bit unlucky in that regard of having a solid sort of relationship. They've kind of come and gone, but it's nothing that's ever really been substantial enough, I guess, until recently. But even then, it was just a 2-year relationship that, yeah. You know, it's interesting, we actually met on Grindr, and he would tell me that when we were in a relationship that he was always intimidated to like talk to me. He would always see my picture on the app when he would always go on there, but he would always be too scared to kind of talk to me, and I always found that really interesting, because I feel like I don't like to consider myself to be an intimidating person. I kind of like to have the idea that it's like okay to talk to me. I shouldn't be like an intimidating figure, but I don't know, it could be like my profile picture, but I just I don't know, but yeah, we had a good run. I guess but I guess the whole reason why we didn't end up no longer being together was that I feel like we were sort of just growing a bit more distant, and we were growing further apart, and yeah, we sort of lost touch with why we were in a relationship in the first place.
My horoscopes tell me to let go. Remove the unwanted and create new impressions. To leave the past behind and release the blocks that have interfered with my progress. But it's difficult when you're so close to me. When we share the same space together. When I know you're just in the next room, when we decide to lay in your bed, embrace in a hug, and question if that's still allowed. Since we broke up, I've been craving a sense of winter, a gentle breeze to caress my face. I tend to thrive more when there's a chew on my arms, and a pair of woolen socks on my feet. Since we broke up, I have been listening to Winehouse again. Her heavy words seem to be more compatible when your heart is on the mend, and when you just can't bring yourself to cry. Since we broke up, I've been under reconstruction. I lost a sense of who I was when we were together. I became more abrasive, more angered, more linear. I was infected by patriarchal ideals and the virus coursed through my veins. People began to notice the change and they informed me of the signs, but I was persistent and continued to ignore. I wasn't courageous enough to acknowledge them in my bubble of love. Since we broke up, I'm beginning to revisit my old habits of distraction. Nothing seems to alleviate the pain, though, and I always have to remind myself the fantasies I create are only temporary. My only form of solitude comes when you're asleep, when I sit under the stars, reflect, and smoke until my lungs are sore. But even then you seem to push through the crevices and invade my thoughts.
I feel there have been some opportunities where I've kind of taken a step back and thought about it a bit more, and I'm kind of like, is that okay? Should I be pursuing this particular thing because I might not be accepted? I sort of mentioned before that I have this, I like to consider that I have this tough exterior, but at the same time, it still very much gets to me, and I sort of say to myself, like, is this a safe environment to be going into? Is this a safe space for me? Because it's just been such a difficult thing to kind of navigate that I kind of always just end up not really pursuing it in fear that I will be judged, that someone will have an opinion about me, that someone's gonna kind of get in my face. And so I mainly write short stories, and that's, I feel like my writing has kind of taken a bit of a journey in itself, in that I kind of initially was kind of hesitant to be writing with a queer voice and revealing certain aspects about myself through my writing, because I was always kind of a bit concerned to kind of completely put myself out there and to completely put my own opinions and perspectives into my stories until very recently. I would always, it was always at the back of my mind, I always kind of considered it as a bit of a foreign concept almost, because I was always just kind of like, do people want to be reading about this? Do people want to be knowing about my life and what I have to say about certain things as a queer man? I would always kind of write from the perspective of someone that I'm unfamiliar with, and it took me a while to kind of adjust that and kind of refine it a bit more, and to kind of write from my own perspective and have my own voice and incorporate that and bring that to the forefront of my writing. And yeah, it was definitely a journey, but I feel like the honors degree definitely helped with that, because I was so interested in learning more about queer writing and queer culture and stuff like that, that it wasn't until I started researching that a bit more and came across people like Quinn Eads and all these other brilliant queer authors, that I not only started to accept that that I could incorporate those types of things in my writing, but it also kind of helped me appreciate the queer man that I am at the end of the day. So Feast, it's just been a couple of events that I've been involved in. I remember there was a call out that was put out for young queer writers to read their own work in front of an audience, and I feel like at the time that was just something that I hadn't really taken the time to really invest in. I would always go to these spoken word events and stuff like that, but always was too scared to kind of put myself up on that stage and read from my own work so honestly and openly. And it wasn't until things like doing that Feast Festival, Queers Underground, and all these other spoken word gigs that that I kind of learned that it was, that I shouldn't be afraid, that it was, that it is a welcoming space to express your own ideas through writing and kind of saying it out loud. And I feel like queer spaces that kind of relate to spoken word, 100%, definitely. But when it comes to things like nightlife and stuff like that, I kind of don't tend to sort of engage with that sort of thing, because I feel like as much love as there is in the queer community in Adelaide, there's also a lot of judgmental people out there who will kind of pick you apart and say that perhaps you're not gay enough, that what you're wearing isn't fashionable enough, that you should be presenting yourself a certain way because you are queer. And which I guess that kind of happens everywhere, but in Adelaide, I think it's just a bit more obvious, I would say. Going back to my early life and as a young person and kind of discovering my sexuality and stuff like that, you know, it's interesting, when I was in primary school, I had a girlfriend, and I remember would always kind of sneak at the back of the bag racks where we'd keep our bags and stuff like that, and would kind of like be really nervous to kiss each other, and we would kind of be keeping it very secretive and stuff like that. But I remember at the time I was sort of introducing myself to things like gay pornography and kind of being sort of researching that, because I just had no idea like what being a gay person meant. I didn't know what having sex was like. I didn't know all those sorts of things. So it was a bit of a strange time, because I felt like I was committed to this person, this like girlfriend that I had for like 3 or 4 months or so, but at the same time I was a bit more interested in kind of discovering what it is to have sex as a man with another man. So yeah, and that definitely kind of influenced how I came out to my family, because I remember at the time my dad found some particular files on the computer that were quite explicit, and you know, he is a youth worker, so he was able to sort of handle that, or I guess be familiar with how to kind of handle that in a way. But you know, at the same time, it kind of took him a while to adjust, because pornography kind of almost became my outlet of discovering who I was and my sexuality and stuff like that. So, but it also kind of put his job in jeopardy, because he was always having to, he worked with sort of younger children, sort of if they found out that like he was looking up that sort of stuff when he is in that kind of environment, that it could definitely put his job in jeopardy. And I feel like that kind of tension between the two created a lot of friction between us, because I was curious and I didn't know how to kind of look into that as much as I how do I explain it? I didn't know ways to kind of invest into that sort of thing, so I would always have to go behind his back to kind of get that. But when he would find out, he would become quite aggressive, and I always that's when I always felt like, again, there was something wrong with me, because I was just simply curious to find out more, but I was almost feeling like I was being punished for that, because he would get aggressive and he would send me to psychologists, being like, you need to sort of discover yourself without relying on these types of things.
What's your relationship with your parents like now?
you know, I'm very close with my mum, but I feel like since the divorce between my mum and my dad, I haven't really been in contact with my dad a whole lot, if I'm being completely honest. He's sort of reached up like here and there, but you know, at this point he's just kind of living his own life and he just doesn't seem to be all that concerned with who I am, because he has kind of created this new life for himself and he is in a committed relationship with someone who isn't my mum. And yeah, I think he's just kind of focusing on that, at least for the meantime, I guess, and kind of put me on the back burner almost. He kind of reaches out with messages every now and again, I guess mainly when it's to do with like special events like my birthday and Christmas and stuff like that. But at the same time, the relationship is really rocky and yeah, I mean, at the same time, it has happened quite recently. So, I guess I'm sort of still trying to kind of figure out how to maintain contact with him while also not resenting his partner too much, you know?
What about your brother? What was he like when you came out, and what's that relationship like now?
You know, I feel like our relationship is, it's been a bit rocky in some regards, because I feel like when I initially came out, especially at school and stuff like that, when people started to find out about my sexuality, he would kind of cop a lot of crap for it, because I feel like not a lot of people want to kind of associate with themselves with a gay person, especially at an all-boys school. So having your brother come out and be so honest with his sexuality, it caused him a lot of grief, because he was kind of unfairly being teased about something that wasn't even related to who he was, you know? But then again, it kind of perhaps was a process for him and kind of learning to accept the whole situation and not have so much resent towards me, because he was experiencing that at school. And I feel like it wasn't until recently that we started to form some kind of relationship that wasn't pure hatred towards one another. And I, at the same time though, I feel like we are really different people, because I like to consider ourselves complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, he's very like macho, you know, rocker type thing, and then here I am as like a flamboyant gay man. It's just, I think marrying the two together, it really took a process for us to kind of build a solid relationship with one another. And yeah.
What about through the marriage equality vote? What was it like for you going through that process?
So, you know, I kind of have a lot of regret, because when that whole situation was going on, I feel like I wasn't as involved as I probably should be. You know, I would always hear about these rallies that were going on, but you know, I would always be finishing my next assignment, or I would have to work. And I mean, I know that's not an excuse, but yeah, I have a lot of regret, because I feel like, again, I just wasn't really engaging in that a whole lot. And I mean, you know, I would definitely hear about it on the news and how they wanted to have like they went to have our votes casted via mail. And I mean, I definitely registered to vote, and I definitely put a tick next to the yes vote. But yeah, I wasn't as involved as I probably should have been. And yeah.
Did you feel that, did you have any feelings about people voting on your rights? Did that impact with you, or was it just sort of background?
You know, it did kind of bother me that the decision of whether I should marry someone else was entirely their business, because I feel like it's not in many ways who I choose to associate with myself with. If I want to be able to marry someone, I should have that option without you having your kind of opinion about it. And it was just a really weird time for me because, you know, at the same time, I was kind of grappling between the whole concept of marriage, because I feel like in many ways it's inherently a very heterosexual thing that has ties to religion, and it is traditionally a religious thing. So kind of, even though in many ways it's not now, it's, I was kind of grappling with that concept.
If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man production, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing to it at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you are listening in Northwest Tasmania and would like to be part of an LGBT+ community, social and support group, search Facebook for Northwest Pride. In Tasmania, if you want support for your sexuality, gender or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03-6231-1200. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.